everybody. Welcome to Yeah, But Still. This week, I'm very excited. For those who have listened to this podcast for a while, I've definitely alluded to wanting to have more hardcore bands on as guests of this pod. This is a band that's near and dear to me, one that I've wanted to have on for a very long time. And now, finally making it happen. Everybody, welcome to the podcast, Have Heart. More specifically, Kay and Pat of the band Have Heart.
Yeah, thanks for having Kay. Literally, I don't think I've ever read a single interview with you in it, Kay.
This is definitely my first podcast appearance, for sure.
Are you normally the quiet one? Strong,
I feel
silent type?
I'm not the face of the band, but I'm behind the scenes pulling a lot of strings.
So yeah.
That could be an exclusive.
Kay likes to call me a puppet master. I like to throw it back at him. He's the puppet master of a puppet master, I guess you could say. But I would love in this day and age for Kay to be the new face of a band that broke up over 10 years ago now. At this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I've wanted to have you guys on this podcast for a long time. I'm stoked that it's finally happening. I think a lot of people might be a little confused to see you on this podcast or surprised for many reasons. But one of them is that you have been broken up for so long. You broke up 10 years ago and then you played these reunion shows. I think there was like two sets of them in Boston, your hometown, and then Los Angeles. And I mean, these were huge. Like, these were huge shows. I think anybody even remotely related to the scene or tertiary scenes was either there or heard about them just because they are so big. If you're unfamiliar with this band, by the way, it's worth looking up Have Heart Reunion just to get a idea of these shows. I mean, they were just too big almost. I think the venues weren't expecting that many people to show up. There's this parking lot show where it's just clearly overflowing with people, like an unreasonable amount, more than I'm used to seeing at a hardcore show. And then the LA one, I had to like watch in the hallway of the venue, like by the bathrooms, because the crowd was literally like spilling out the front door, like into the streets. There was no separation between like the crowd in the venue watching the show and then like the line outside. They like connected.
I don't even remember it really correctly. Our last show our last final show as an actual band, that's in my mind for some reason is it stands out to me as like way crazier. But there was like 8,000 less people at it. It's a real, that big outdoor show was a real blur. The whole, like, we didn't expect that at all. Cause when we broke up, part of the reason why we broke up and is that we were like kind of reading the writing on the wall and we were like, oh, I think, the tolerance for, vulnerable, hard, personally expressive hardcore is coming to a close as bands like Trapped Under Ice, who are our friends, were kind of gaining a little bit larger notoriety, and you know, there's a more of an appetite for you know, what I call ass beating music, and and so when we left, it wasn't like people were throwing rotten tomatoes at us on our way out, but like if we had stayed on a year longer, they definitely would have been like throwing bags of shit at us, like to leave. And we were like kind of like historically minded about it. And we had seen bands that like broke up at exactly the right time. And then we had seen bands that stuck around way too long. You know, we were kind of out of gas with the writing stuff and we didn't want to push a record that we didn't really have like the energy for. So we just pulled the plug and then, you know, the 10 year thing came around and,
real quick, there was a specific moment in time where we decided to break up, which was at a festival in Richmond called United Blood.
Oh yeah.
And, we headlined the festival and I believe Trapped Under Ice played right before us. Played a blistering set and then basically everybody left. and we were just like, oh, I guess it's over now.
Yeah, we were in the van. It was like kind of quiet on the way back. Because the fucked up thing was literally 1 year prior, we played the same festival to probably the same people and fucking killed it. It was like the craziest show we had ever played in Richmond. And like I'm confident to say it was one of the most wild United Blood sets ever. And then exactly 1 year later, it was truly like, fuck you guys. And everyone was gone. And we were just like, we were in the van driving around. We were like, no one said anything for about like 15, 20 minutes. And we were like, yeah, it's probably time to pull the fucking plug.
Yeah.
That's rough. But anyway, all right. So you guys played these reunion shows. I mean, I originally brought these up just – It's worth noting. To me, they're noteworthy because it was just so many people. And like growing up, we went to hardcore shows. There's like pretty much a ceiling to how big a show is going to be. I've gone to fests where it's just like a couple hundred people in the crowd. And these were wild shows. The Boston one looked especially crazy. So that was the reunion. That's where I met you guys. And
we were stoked to see you.
Bro, I was stoked to see you. What the hell? So now
our,
this is like
our bassist, Austin Stemper, it's like, oh my God, it's Versace. And I was like, what? And he's like, he's over there. Yeah. And when we found out you were a fan, I mean, we were thinking about doing another set of reunions, man. Just
bro, get back on the road. I'll come. Let's go.
The meme lord, Versace Tamagotchi.
Brandon's smiling over there in a way I do not like. I don't like
that. I mean, not to bring up old content, but probably like 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that shirt, Music Died in 99.
Yeah.
And I was like, there has never been anything that's been laser targeted to my humor and sensibilities like that shirt. So I almost bought 5 of them for the band.
Dude.
But then I saw they're $40 and I was like,
that was like one of those, I mean, we'll move on from talking about myself, but the shirt you're describing is like literally, it just says that on the front. And then on the back is like 30 copyrighted logos of bands. And I sold those for like a long time without getting in trouble, surprisingly.
Ian MacKay, that money grubbing billionaire.
I know, right? He's changed, dude. He's changed. But dudes, I was texting you earlier. I just casually asked you if you had anything you wanted to talk about on this podcast. And you responded with quite a few things. I mean, you hit me with a couple paragraphs that I've now turned into a set of notes. I don't think I realized how much touring you guys. Like you toured the world. I don't think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a fun podcast. We're usually like, it's nice to talk about, I guess, the lighter things for once. We wrote pretty personally and lyrically and had like really intense shows. But like, if anyone really hung out with us, it's not that like that energy was fake. But like, you know, we are multifaceted human beings, and like, you know. We're not just all sitting in the van 100% of the time, like writing poetry to each other and crying and just vigorously yelling at each other for social ills.
Yeah.
It was predominantly like talking about like how destructive CeCe's pizza is to like, you know, the digestive system and like really stupid shit like that. So, you know, I'm happy to run through like the reality I would say of like kind of being idiots on tour.
Oh, and I love the classic tour stories. Oh, but actually before that, one thing that you told me before that really stuck out is like while you were, because you're a teacher now, is it okay if we talk, can we acknowledge that? So you teach high school, and did you like you mentioned that like a couple of your students came to those reunion shows. I was surprised it was just like a couple. Like, do they know about? Like, do your students know that you're in a band or were in a band? Like, what do they?
What do you teach?
I teach high school history. I teach 10th graders and seniors.
I mean, like for me, if I found out my teacher, if I like looked up my teacher and like found the YouTube results, I would for you. I would be like really stoked. But I don't know. Like
it's definitely weird.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is weird because we kind of just totally came at the band as a pretty pure, as pure as can be, like just down to play shows. I never, even to this day, like I still don't consider myself a musician in any way, shape or form. And so like,
despite having student, to having a career as a
right,
traveling like, musician touring.
I mean, it is unfair to actual musicians that our band got so popular.
Yeah.
To compare us to like somebody who can play.
Sure.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Right. So in my mind, and I say this not with false modesty, but like I genuinely don't care.
Yeah.
about any of the perceived success that we have, and it's not because I'm like all zen and I'm above it. You know, I have my anxieties and stress. I want music that I put out there to do well, of course, but like I really like history and I like education, and that's actually where I'm at. And the last thing, and I don't know if anyone here has had this experience, but the truly death to me is when you're the teacher who like is trying to be cool with the students. I had a couple of those, and it's just the worst. It's just the fucking goddamn worst to have like a poser for a teacher, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And because like you're sitting there and you're like, oh, you're so lame, and you try to connect, and it's just like just do your fucking job. Don't be my friend. And like my father was, after he retired from the Army, he was a teacher, and I had him as a teacher, and I got to see how he taught. And like no joke, like I had him my freshman year in Latin, and he didn't not once make known of the fact that I was his son.
Damn.
Like,
hell yeah.
Like it was the first day, like I had expected somewhere along the way, somewhere to be one joke about, hey, father son dynamics. Fucking nothing. Like you would have, everyone knew, but he never made one insinuation about like, hey, son.
Yeah.
Like you're going to get in trouble like for that. Like not once. And so like that was a year long experience of thinking my father either didn't love me or was doing something like really profound as an educator, which was like taking his job seriously. So I think I took to that. So like when the student stuff, I don't really pay it that much mind. And my student, you can just tell, like at least on my end, that they are so bummed that I am not interested.
Do they ask you like, about it?
Yeah, totally. Like, cause now I think there's like a reputation at the school.
By the way,
like, oh,
are you saying that? Oh, go ahead.
No, like kids are like, oh, that's the guy who, you know, was in bands or is in a band. I actually
the
had
rockin'
a
rocking teacher.
Yeah. I had a coworker. She was at a grocery store, and the teenager clerk kid was like, and she asked him, she's like, oh, are you a student? I'm like, yeah. And I'm a teacher. I teach at this school. And he's like, oh, this is a different town. He's like, oh, does Pat, do you work with Pat Flynn? And she's like, yeah, how do you know him? Cause it's like this teenage boy. And so like, she's like, oh, like I love his band. And is it true that he's on tour all the time and doesn't go to work? So,
yeah.
It is like cool that you kind of keep the two separate, because I have had teachers that have outside situations happening that were always bringing it into the classroom.
Yeah.
Sixth grade, Holy Family Catholic Academy, Mr. Musak did a lot of community theater. And then he'd bring the tapes and be like, let's run it back. Let's watch.
No way.
And he would just like show
oh
us.
Oh my God. Like,
he would just show us like him acting in a play. And
that's
like,
so funny.
He definitely didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
He didn't
want to
be it at school.
Yeah. There's like,
I can't imagine Pat bringing in a tape of himself in front of students, especially because he's screaming.
Right.
It's not like singing or any sort of musicianship. It's like not normal behavior.
Yeah. Luckily, I was just pretty much just singing about like not doing drugs and like trying to be yourself.
I mean, yeah, like your whole thing was like positivity, right?
Yeah, I mean, your number,
reductive?
Most streamed song is Armed with a Mind. I feel like, you know, open up the class with that in a really dorky way if you wanted to get motivate them. Like writing it on the chalkboard.
Yeah. There's so many ways I could be so fucking lame. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a cool teacher. Like, I think that I have like any teacher is dorky, especially if they like really like their job. But I hope that it comes off to the kids that it's like authentic.
Yeah.
But like, I don't go like I will bring in like a tour story if it suits like a type of analogy that I'm trying to explain for kids about human behavior. Like one that I always I use to, which is a useful tale. When I'm trying to teach the concept of like what it means to be part of a nation state and a part of like a country that is just, there's no nationhood. It's just like the state and then you. I give them the example of like when we were in Russia, I think it was St. Petersburg and then Moscow. Okay. I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah. The train.
Yeah. Well, I just remember, well, for one, this was one of the topics. It's Kay, you can chime in on this. This is a good story. This is a digression, but like.
No, digress by all means. That's what this podcast is, really.
Like in the States, when bands tour, it's geographically sensible. Like you just go, you know, like we would go, you know, Boston to New York, down the East Coast, and then kind of, you know, go through the you know, American South through Texas, Southwest, California, you know, go up to the Northwest, and then we kind of cut to the Midwest and then loop back up. And it makes sense. But in Europe, they're not – like we weren't booking our own tours. We had an agency, and they're booking based on the dollar. So, like, they don't – like they're trying to get the venue that's going to give them the best profit. Like essentially we would do these tours, like we'd go from Germany and then we'd be in Sweden and then we'd be in Madrid, Spain. It would be essentially like going from like
Jesus.
Like Boston to Kentucky to New York City to New Jersey to like and we would be in Europe just like idiots being like, man, these drives are so fucking long. There's just so much space all between Germany. Meanwhile, we were like we always had like these like terrible like circumstances, but the one that really stands out the most is we flew into Helsinki, then we drove to the border of Russia and Finland and played a show.
We stayed in an apartment, woken up at around what, 4 a.m.?
No, you're missing a beat. So we drove, and the drive from Helsinki to the Russian border is like 7 or 8 hours. We play that show on the Russian border, and then we drive back the 7 or 8 hours to Helsinki, play in Helsinki, and then we drive. No, and then we get picked up. So, Kay, you can chime in here.
Yeah, we got picked up around 4 a.m. at this apartment by somebody we presume to be our driver. He actually doesn't speak any English.
Well,
he's just some Russian dude. And then he proceeds to take us to, where was the first show? St. Petersburg?
The Finnish kids don't know who's picking us up. We don't know who's picking us up. In my life now, I would never at 4 a.m. get in the car. A car, by the way, for 5 of us with like equipment and everything. Equipment's up to my eyes in the back seat and drive. And bear in mind, we had just done this drive twice. So we're, for the third time, we're driving like trek from Helsinki to Russia. And the guy doesn't speak a single fucking word to us. We get to the border and he's just like, get out. And we just like go through a line with these strange Russian men. And then they let us in. So that was our experience. But when we arrived there, I had this conversation back to like the student thing that I'll use tour stories to like convey a point. So like before the French Revolution, and continued on to a certain extent, there was no like concept of like the people who were French were like the people who lived in the palaces and the aristocracy. So like normal people who lived in cities and on farms, they weren't even thought of as French. They were just like beings who served the state. And so my students don't really understand that. And so I give them like a modern day example that like, so we took a overnight train from St. Petersburg to Moscow. I was on last, so I had to share it with like three strange Russian Ukrainian men who were just staring at me. So like I was like, all right, you know what, I think I'm just gonna hang out in the car and just like watch Russia roll by. And I was looking at it, and you know, in my dumb mind, I'm thinking like, you know, it's been a while since like the Soviet Union collapsed, so like I'm thinking, you know, it's probably a little bit more developed or something like that. And it's still like this is in 2008, and I'm like, it's still this like economically destroyed place, but St. Petersburg and Moscow are like these beautiful epicenters of like architectural culture. And I remember we got off to Moscow, and like I eventually started talking with this one kid that was showing us around, and I was like, hey, what's the deal between St. Petersburg and Moscow? Like, I don't really know much about it. It looks like it's pretty hard up. And he goes, that's not really Russia. I was like, what the fuck do you mean it's not Russian? He goes, those aren't really Russians. And I was like, well, then what the fuck are they? He's like, they're just like people who work. They're not really, they don't influence the state. They're just there. And I was like, what do you mean they're just fucking there? Like, we've done tours from Boston to California, and like at one point am I like, oh, these people, they're just humans that just walk around. They're not Americans. Like, so like that kind of helps them get the point like about nation. But that's like when I'll bring in Havard stories into the equation with its education.
Do you ever have like moments of like just ego struggle where like a kid is kind of being shitty? And you're like just internally like, I've fucking toured internationally. Like I'm a cool guy. I don't deserve this.
Listen, bitch, I'm cool. You don't get it.
Hey, that's
I
a
am
really
cool.
Good question. No, I guess. Like,
no.
Like, do you mean like if they think I'm lame and I want to like really just be like, yo, dude, you got no idea how fucking cool I am.
Yeah, like I don't know. Teens are like fucking annoying and shitty, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
grab a kid, put him against the wall, be like, listen, punk, why don't you Google Havard last show part 2 of 7 on YouTube, and then watch that, then see who you think is a lame idiot, okay? Who you think is sus? All right.
Didn't you start a new metal club for you know, unwell children or unadjusted children?
No, there, so there was.
I thought you did that at one point.
I kind of don't want an explanation. I just like to think. I'd like to continue believing that you like that was your way of trying to turn around the at-risk youth as being like,
yeah,
guys, come to the Korn and Deftones club after school and we'll listen to some music.
We'll turn your life around through music.
Yeah, you know what's really going to help you deal with all of your social-emotional struggles? The first Korn record is going to get you through the rough.
I mean, it got a lot of people through a lot of things, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what...
Ourselves included.
I wanted to get some of these bullet points. These things you teased me with, folks. So I don't know where to start.
Being brutally beaten in the streets in Sydney, Australia.
I mean, what's the best one to start? You guys toured like a lot of places that are like, I'm just skimming this right now. I'm seeing all of these countries that I don't know, like hardcore is like, there's a scene for it in a lot of countries where it's surprising, but I don't know. Not many hardcore bands like tour the world.
Well, 2005 and 2006 when we first went to Europe, but like the more like I guess you could say like frontiers, like places where like hardcore
doesn't exist.
Yeah. Like, so yeah. We're technically the first straight edge band to play mainland China.
We're like literally hardcore doesn't exist.
and
just live music exists. So people can see live music.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is one of the things we were on the bullet point. Like, so we were told that Hong Kong, because it's, you know, ties to like Western democracy, would be like the place to play because they had had like, I think,
like dance play.
Yeah, I think Fucked Up had played there in Hong Kong, but they didn't play mainland China. And our tour started in Club Mao. That was like the name in Beijing. So like that was like,
yeah.
I couldn't believe that like the first club we're playing in China was called Club Mao. I was like, how could this, like, be any more stereotypical?
Yeah, it's like the hypothetical that like a racist guy would think up in his head. If you had to, like, yeah, make...
right. Where are you playing, Club Mao?
Yeah.
Yes, actually. we play the mainland, and Hong Kong was last. And I think it was... Guangzhou was incredible.
There are probably like 400 people there.
Oh, wow.
Like, packed out show.
It was insane. Like, yeah. no one knew. Like, so Guangzhou is like... It's kind of crazy that show had the highest turnout.
Yeah.
Because Guangzhou is like it's just completely factories. That's all it is. Like, remove any nice building from New York and just put it with not even like just like a like just put it like just replace all of it with factories. That's kind of like what I remember being in Guangzhou about it. And it's like pretty much windowless factories too. And so it has like this like super like Orwellian life sucks. It's
you're
just
playing,
all labor.
You're playing on the Foxconn campus practically.
Right. so like, and that was like the largest turnout.
Yeah, that was a wild show. People were very excited, like taking photos with us and asking everyone for autographs, things like that.
That's it.
Yeah. So like we're looking at that show and we're like, holy fuck, if this is what like a factory town, factory city, that seems like so stereotypically like mainland, like China, like city style, like, and that many people came out, then this fucking Hong Kong show is going to be insane. And so like we take the ferry over, we get to Hong Kong and we're just like, hell yeah. And we get to the venue, what felt early. And then like an hour goes by and then another hour goes by and we're like, yeah, when's everyone getting here? And they're like, it's going to be a minute or so. And we're like, oh, all right. So the other thing, okay, I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, but wasn't this show, like if you look at Hong Kong and like the city skyline, there's like, there's like a lot of like apartments, like, and just buildings on like these giant kind of mini mountains, I guess you could say, or like giant like hills. And like, I think the venue was like on top of one of those places.
Yeah, it was.
So like, you had to like drag our equipment all the way up and then we finally get there and like hours go by and then it's like, you know.
All right, start. Show's starting.
Like,
there's literally like no one there. There's probably two people who paid, and I think they were both American.
Yeah, yeah, they were both.
I remember one of them like was from Boston.
That's so funny.
We played this show to two people,
just like one Boston guy in China.
Yeah. Exactly.
Literally, just got like, really lost and hadn't gone home. This is how I'd like to imagine him.
Would you went through with the show? There were more people on stage than in the crowd.
Oh, without a doubt.
We played many shows to nobody. So the fact that our reunion shows were good is kind of a karmic payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Or it's just like a wholesale lie to the public of what things were actually like.
Yeah.
But
there's no videos of the shows of us playing to nobody.
That's
there's
perfect.
Only videos of good shows. So
nobody had to record it. See, kind of perfect, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, so our experience in China was like kind of shitty, and like so that was like the tail end because after that we went to Southeast Asia, which by the way was like unbelievably awesome. But the way that the China store, China, like part of the world tour started was like truly every year when I'm like teaching my unit on, like, you know, when we're really zeroing in on the history of China, I'll bring in photos of, like, you know, us in front of, like, the Forbidden Palace in Beijing, or, like, you know, there's a statue of me in, like, Simone Bolivar or something like that. You know, just be like, hey, this stuff exists. I've seen it. And by the way, I'm cool.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but, like, it was this final world tour, and we had this first stretch out to Chicago where we were doing shows with like, Bane to this, like, reunion festival. And we would fly out of Chicago. And I remember booking it thinking, like, you know what, why not just, like, you know, rather than just, you know, finishing the show in Chicago and then flying right to Beijing, why don't we just have a day off in Chicago? Which is ironic because Bane had asked us, they're like, hey, do you guys just want to jump on this show we're playing in somewhere in Indiana? And we were like, yeah, fuck it, let's just play. So, like, we didn't even get that day in Chicago. So we drive out. We're just, like, kind of cruising, just stop, like, doing, like, late night tour drives. And, like, we stop at, like, a McDonald's somewhere in the Midwest, like, a truly unremarkable place on the earth. Just, like,
I mean, that's the
McDonald's.
Most vague thing you could say. McDonald's right. In the Midwest.
Yeah. Right. We were basically just tailgating in this parking lot, having like the greatest time of our lives.
That's like literally all I did
up to then.
Growing up.
And it was like just true middle school era shit. We're in a McDonald's parking lot. And I think we were listening to like Machine Head moshing like idiots, just being dumb idiots, being like, oh, and like eating the worst fast food on the planet. And so then, like, I think we just kind of stayed up all night because we're like, oh, it's a long flight. So we get to the airport in Chicago, and I think it's O'Hare. Is that correct? Airport
correct.
Knowledge is still on fire. So we get there, and I go up to the front desk, and I'm like, all right, hey. And I hand her, like, the printed out reservation. I was like, yep, we're getting on this, you know, check our bags, ma'am. We'd like to get on this flight to go to Beijing.
Yeah.
yeah. Cause we're a rock band. See the guitar cases
check
over
this
there.
Guitar. Mind checking this?
Yeah. We're a touring band, ma'am. So like, not that I was actually doing that, but nonetheless, I handed it to her and she's like, yeah, this flight left, yesterday, 24 hours ago. And I was like, and the four guys were behind me, and I was like, whoa, really? Like, because this would have been like this was a colossal fuck up, because if we miss this flight, it completely cancels the other ones. It just removes you off of it. And so I'm just like standing, I go like completely white, and I'm like, and I was just like, ma'am, I was like, I'm so. And then she goes, and also, like, this is the wrong – I forgot about this. She's like, this isn't even the airline that's going to fucking fly you to –
Oh, man.
So, like, I just look like a complete asshole to this woman. And I'm like, oh, fuck. So then we go to the – but then she gives me a tip, and God bless this woman. She's like, hey, here's the deal. When you go to this place – you have to like work, like you have to get their sympathy. Cause if you don't get it, like, they're not going to help you out. So you have to like really play like, you know, something bad happened. And I was like, oh fuck. Okay. So I don't know if you remember, but I remember telling the four of you like, hey, I'm the world's biggest fuck up here. And we all need to look very sad as you stand behind me. And we're going to go with this story that our van was broken into and we like, you know, missed this flight. So we do that, and I think it actually worked out sort of in our favor because it gave us a direct flight to Beijing, which sounds fucking crazy because that's half North America.
Yeah.
Chicago to Beijing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I was like, whoa, they actually do that. And so they put us on a direct flight. And so I was like, oh, cool. Like we didn't miss any shows cause we had the kid, I think his name was Paul, who was like showing us around. Like we had a day off, and I'm like, thinking, you know, like, everything's fine. We didn't miss any shows. So we get to Beijing, and the first thing that he says to us is, oh, man, it's too bad you guys didn't arrive on time because we were supposed to go to the Great Wall of China. And I'm actually thinking, and I'm like doing the math, and I was like, wait a minute. At the exact time that this future aspiring history teacher was supposed to be visiting one of the most treasured ancient sites in all of human history, I was in a fucking McDonald's parking lot eating dog food and moshing to Machine Head.
In Indiana.
Yeah. In Indiana.
Yeah. God damn.
Yeah, the drive from Chicago to Indiana is bad. It's just like all like factories and like abandoned towns. That's like where my family was born. Like my parents were from like that stretch. And I used to have to do that commute. It's brutal. That's so funny.
Like it's safe to say that it's like it's not the fucking Great Wall of China. That's for sure.
Very, very different. Very, very different.
The ironic thing is that when we were in China, we were young, didn't have any money, basically didn't have internet at that point. So we got taken to one Chinese restaurant, and I feel like we didn't actually like it because we were young and dumb. Well, and so we ate at McDonald's pretty much every meal of that entire trip in China, which looking back is like, you know, the dumbest thing you can do.
Okay, I don't know if you remember, but do you remember when we went to the Pizza Hut?
I don't.
Dude, I'll never forget it. And I actually do bring this up when I'm talking about like what globalization can kind of look like in the world. But I ordered buffalo wings from Pizza Hut in Beijing, and I got it with blue cheese. And when they gave it to me, I thought they forgot the blue cheese. And so I was like, whatever. I guess I'll just eat it straight. And so I took a bite into it, and they have a different take on how you have blue cheese. They injected it into the buffalo wing.
Whoa.
There's needles involved.
Okay. Wait,
truth
listening.
Be told. So I take a bite into it, and it fucking explodes on my face, and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" So like. I thought it was some weird like chemical buildup or waste in there.
Oh yeah, like fat deposits or something.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and like the guy's like, no, that's the cheese. I was like, oh,
what?
Fuck. Like, but
you order buffalo wings in China and blue cheese, it just nuts blue cheese into your mouth.
I mean that's one way to interpret it. Yeah, for sure. So like to me, I was like, "Damn! Like this is pretty interesting." And what was the other place? Bruce Lee. We went to the Bruce Lee restaurants. That was
you guys
like
are uncultured.
Like they're kind of like KFC.
What's this story about you getting beaten up in Sydney?
Viciously beaten.
Viciously beaten.
You got to use the right words. I would say, viciously beaten within an inch of my life.
Are you serious? Are you exaggerating? What happened?
Well. I guess we can tell the story.
Yeah, and also, Kay, I want you to tell a story sometime too, if you got one to tell. Or chime in on this one.
Definitely chime in.
I mean, there's like a two-parter because it starts from Pat's perspective, then it starts from the rest of the people's perspective.
All right, let's do that. Let's do that.
And the reason for that is because I was neurologically concussed, so I couldn't offer
fucking
perspective. So it was our last tour, and like we had this little not mantra, but we were like, hey, you know, we're not gonna be touring the world ever again. So like, let's try and go out whenever we can, because it's very easy to just like go to sleep and then you miss a night. And so we just played a great show in Australia. That's my Australian accent. Sorry,
it was
we played in Sydney. And the show was great. And we go back to our hostel, which is like a side street off of like what was like a kind of like a busy downtown area. And it was known as kind of like the clubbing district, I think. But also in kind of like one end was kind of like not, it was kind of crime, like high crime. The other end was like clubs. So like, you know, drinking and high crime, it's not a good mix. But, you know, we decided to go out, you know, like,
basically all right. half of you went out, half of us stayed at the hostel.
Yeah.
That's where this divide starts.
Right. So it was like me, two members of the band, and our friend Danny, who she, wonderful human being, you know, worked for the label that was like bringing us around. And so I think it was just like four of us or something. And so we're coming out like out of the side street onto the main road, and we turn left, and as we're approaching like the main road, we hear like just kind of like loud yelling and sounded like quarreling. And so we approach it. They weren't fighting, but they're just kind of like yelling at each other. And the group that I was with, like the three or four people I was with, decide to go around this group, like kind of walking into the street. But I noticed that there was just enough room for me to walk by and kind of go alongside where like the shutters for like the front like of this business were. I could scoot by that because I was closest to like the corner. So I turn left, and then I was dressed kind of, I guess, like neutrally in this case. So I was wearing something that could be perceived as like somewhere between like streetwear and like clubbing. You know, you can do the imagery in your head.
Yeah.
But what I recall was that the quarrel was between clubbers, and for lack of a better term, I hope that this is not an offensive term, but like kids who are like of the street. So like street kids. So I'm kind of dressed neutrally, but it looks like both sides are like probably inebriated in hindsight, definitely. So as I'm scooting by, someone gets shoved into me and like really hard. And I go like flying into like the shutters, and I very kind of peacefully, okay, you're not with us, right?
I'm not with you. No. So I've only heard this.
So like, I like very peacefully, like, I'm like, all right, never mind. But like, I guess me pushing this person that was like thrown into me to the side was deemed as like, you know, like some type of first attack move. So I push this person off of me, and then someone just punches me in the face. And I'm not one for fighting. I believe in the power of nonviolence. But you know, the second you lay hands on me, I'm going to fucking beat your ass. Cause like, you can't do that. There's like these primal instincts just like shot through like my skull. And the legend has it, I'm grabbing this person by the hair, like Goodfellas style, just beating the fuck out of this person for all of 1 second. And, and the next thing I know, this is all happening in the span. I'm telling it forever, but like taking forever to tell it, but like it's all happening in the span of like a minute, but this interaction is happening. Like me, the fight is happening between like 5-10 seconds. So like, I'm like beating this guy viciously, just really winning for all of 1 second. And the next thing I know, I don't know how, like, it was so weird. My recollection of it is that like, I was fighting this guy, and then I looked up and I'm on the ground and my head is up against a curb and a tire, and I'm just getting wailed on. And the only thing saving me from like excessive head trauma is the fact that I'm technically kind of like under the, like the part of the car where they can't get, cause like I'm in a tire.
Jesus.
And like someone yells out, like, curb that C word, which I will leave it at that as a teacher.
It's not a bad word over there.
Yeah, I know. Sure. I'm gonna take my chances. So someone yells that out, and I just remember time slowing down because I was like, holy shit, I just heard that. I'm about to die. And yeah. I remember time slowing down. I thought of my ex-girlfriend, who's my now wife, and like my best friend and my father, and it was all in slow motion. And And our friend Danny, it doesn't help that our friend Danny, who's like this really, you know, short, petite blonde girl who's shrieking. She's like shrieking, like, because she's watching someone essentially get murdered. And so I hear that, and that's kind of like bringing me back to consciousness. And somehow, and like from what I gather, is that the guys in the band that were with me were pulling people off of me. But what was happening is that neither side knew who the fuck I was, so they were all just beating the shit out of me.
Oh no!
Yeah, both sides, for whatever reason, squashed their beef and decided to only beat on Pat.
Oh, no. I mean,
so I'm sitting there, I'm literally in it, and like somehow, like, thank God my like bandmates were like pulling me off of, like pulling people off me, because that allowed me to like get up. And so then next thing I know, I'm in the middle of the street, and it's kind of wet and raining. And then the next thing I know is that there's this guy swinging a fucking chain.
Oh no, it's not over?
No. Bloody. There's this one guy, and he's like, I think he was bloody. I don't know if that's the case, but I don't know if you know who the chain guy is, Kay, because I don't really. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. So I think at this point, Danny had run back to the hostel to get the rest of us, and there were probably like seven of us, and she was screaming, "Some like Pat's getting beat up. Everybody run!" So we ran out of the hostel, into the street, directly into this, what we perceived to be a brawl. And I remember seeing this guy swinging the chain with blood pouring down his forehead, and he was licking the blood like a psycho.
Oh no.
Right, yeah.
Basically, we didn't know what was happening, so we just kind of started fighting people in the street. I don't know how this situation kind of fizzled out, but after it fizzled out, we looked around and Pat was gone. He was right. Just missing. And we spent some time looking for you, like all over. And we had eaten at a kebab shop, or you had eaten at a kebab shop.
Wait, who took out the chain? The chain guy licking the blood. Did you guys?
I don't know what happened. Like, I think it just dispersed.
So what I think, this is my theory of what happened, is that this guy's like swinging the fucking chain at me. But the other thing is, on the other side of me is like the club guy, and I gotta tell you, I hope this person either was a boxer or became a boxer, because they were laying the most horrendous, like powerful punches to my face. And like every one of them was landing. Like it was just like, boom, boom. Like in a manner that kept me standing like one of those punching bag clowns that just kind of keep popping up. And also, mind you, this is all in the span of like 45 seconds. And so like all I did was turn the fucking corner. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So this one dude's swinging a chain, and this other dude's just landing these punches on me. And like, so, and on the street that we're on, everything was closed except for the kebab shop, but I'm so disoriented. And I'm like, I need to run away, because I'm gonna fucking die. So like, all I have right now is to run away, because there's two people against me. One of them swinging a chain, their face is bloody. The other one is like landing every punch perfectly right in my face. And I think I got one punch in, and he and I fell on the ground. And apparently a car almost like completely killed me. I don't recall that. But I fall. Me and the club guy both fall down. I get up, and then I was like, I hope I'm running where the kebab shop is, because if I go down like the part of the street where everything's closed, I just have to keep running. And there's this chain guy fucking following me, or like, you know, swinging a chain at me. So I just run as fast as I can. And I just ran into luckily I was in the right direction, and I just ran into the kebab shop, right into the back where where they were cooking.
The kitchen.
Right. And these poor guys are like, what the hell? And I'm like, And I was like, hey, I'm pretty sure people are, I'm like fully concussed this moment and like in a total, like, you know, concussion moment. And I'm like, someone's trying to murder me. That's all I'm saying. So I'm just going to sit right here. And the guy's like looking around. He's like, they're trying to murder you? Like, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going there. I'm standing right here. And he's like, so luckily he was quite nice. But like when one, like eventually one of our bandmates, like,
because you were fully missing, nobody knew where you were.
You guys just right. got in a fight to defend him, then all of a sudden it's over and he's gone.
He's completely gone.
So back to you. Right. Let's switch perspectives now. Kay, where were you guys at?
We were just so confused because basically at the hostel we were kind of just like sleeping or reading, and all of a sudden Danny comes in and starts screaming that Pat's getting murdered. So as we ran out, it was such a confusing situation, including seeing, you know, Chain Guy and all this stuff, that we were completely disoriented. And the fact that Pat was missing, we were just like, what? Like,
is he dead?
Is he dead? Yeah, exactly. And so we were just, I think we split up and just wander around trying to find you. I believe someone went into the kebab shop, but didn't see you because you were in the kitchen. And so it was like an ordeal to find you. Eventually someone did find you in the kitchen. You were completely fucking concussed and gone. I believe you kept saying, am I still dating Maren? And then we'd be like, no, you guys broke up. And then you'd be like, oh fuck.
Right. Wait, that's my now wife.
Wait, am I still dating Maren? Dude, you broke up.
It's a subplot through all of this.
Fuck.
Yeah. I was completely out of it. I do vividly remember when I was found, I remember quoting Anchorman.
Oh my God.
I do not remember that.
Because like, you know, the scene where like after like the big fight and Will Ferrell's like, well, that escalated quickly. I just quoted that. And I was trying to not have like a mental, like a complete mental breakdown about almost getting murdered. And like my only mental mechanism in that case was to like, just be funny. And I was like, well, that escalated quickly. And the bandmate that found me was like crying because they thought I was like dead. And I'm just like quoting Anchorman. I'm like, yeah. Hey, am I dating my ex-girlfriend? And like, I remember saying that. And then I remember, maybe Kay, you can corroborate this, but I remember going back out there and the Australian police were there. The Sydney police were there. And one of them said, like, hey, it's not just all kangaroos, is it? And like, I was so crazy at the moment that I was so pissed that he said that to me, because it was like, you ignorant American, like, you think like less of my place. And I was like, I didn't fucking say that. I didn't say this was about kangaroos. I didn't say this place was full of koalas. Fuck you, man. I was like mouthing off to this like this dickhead Australian police officer. And then I just like spent the night at the ER where I'm pretty sure I contracted some disease but like viral infection that you get in hospitals, like typically.
Staph?
I don't think it was whatever it was. Like, I remember like a lot, not long later, being like, what the fuck? Like, I definitely got it. Cause it was also like, it was like half ER, half methadone clinic. And yeah, if this is a testament to my love for my wife, I spent like the entirety of the night just asking Danny, who had brought me to the ER, like, do you think she'll take me back? Like, do you think we'll start? And Danny doesn't know who the fuck this girl is. And I just kept asking that over and over. The next morning I woke up and I felt like I had been run over by like a steamroller. And we played a show and I had to start off being like,
played a show that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I had to start off saying like, so the doctor said that if I hit my head, I will die. So don't touch me as you go for a stage dive. I think you can find footage of that show. It was in we're Byron Bay or something like that, or like Brisbane. It was in Brisbane the next day. And it was a fucked up story.
Dude, that's how long did it take you to recover?
Not
you
long.
Seemed fine. You seemed fine the next day, and we continued to play shows.
And it was, for real?
Very surprised.
And it was just like a concussion? That was it?
Yeah, I mean, the annoying thing was that, like, all the marks and the bruises were like, not on my face. So, like, and they were, like, all, like, on my scalp.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, you know, all over my body. And I remember just being like, fuck, I can't even like look like I got my ass beat. And like the next day.
Yeah. Nobody's going to believe you. Be like, no. It hurts real bad. Like you just don't know.
Yeah. I also vividly remember the next day and actually kind of still today. I don't really like big crowds. Like I'm a little wary. I don't want to call it like trauma, but it's definitely a place where I go back to, like if I'm in a larger crowd.
I mean,
like,
that's pretty reasonable though too. Like,
yeah, like Fiddlehead, my other band, we were in London for New Year's Eve like a year ago, and we were going to watch the fireworks somewhere on like some hill, and it was just like everyone was there, and there were these there were like these two drunk, super English, like British guys, like sitting behind me, Fiddlehead, and my like 5 month pregnant wife at the time, and they're sitting behind us, and they're saying the C word, which is also not a bad word over there.
Yeah, but, that's your, I would say that's a trigger for you. If I heard that again, I mean that's so like very fair PTSD. Trigger,
right? Yeah,
it's like I think it is.
You're making a great observation there.
Yeah.
So I'm like sitting there, and they're just like they're getting super drunk, and there's just like families all around, but we're like right in front of them, and you know we picked our spot to watch the fireworks, and I'm like, you know, like nudging my wife, being like, hey, how about we like just like move a little bit further? And she's like, why? This is great. And I'm like, ah, okay, whatever, fine. Like, and then I'm like nudging like my guitarist and be like, hey, you wanna? I think it's kind of cool over there. He's like, nah, mate, this is like a pretty good spot. And I'm like, all right, okay. And then like, I spent like the whole night just being like clutching like a bottle in case I was about to have like some like fight with these two. Like, they're just dumb, drunk British guys. But I was like, oh, they're gonna fucking fight us, and I'm gonna have to like defend my pregnant wife. And
yeah, you know. I mean that's not weird to me. I honestly think the country of Australia owes you an apology. And
well,
we have
listeners. I got a fucking bill sent to my house in Massachusetts. My father, he was like, hey, because I didn't tell my parents this because they would, what would that do for them? But my father was like, hey, were you in the ER in Sydney? And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. He's like, yeah, you owe them like $500. And I was like, oh, fuck.
That's not too bad, so though.
I thought it's universal over there.
There was some fee, man. It wasn't universal for me. I guess
God
it was
damn.
Universal for those Aussies.
Yeah. What the hell? I mean, 500 bucks though, for that isn't too bad. It could be worse. Damn. No. Okay. So, yeah, viciously was accurate.
Thank you.
That, looking back though, that is one of the funniest stories.
Thanks.
Dude, that's fucking insane. I'm like glad you're alive.
Jesus Christ.
I am too. We have
yeah, I mean, oh,
more
also
stories to tell.
This all like all of the stories, by the way, seem like it's like you we're kind of like learning the relationship story of you and your now wife and mother of your kids too, right? You're a dad.
Yeah, that's a big through line.
It is funny though, because like, I mean, at least I know that you're married with happily married with kids, but it is funny because we're hearing these like tidbits of your wild days and kind of like my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, same person. And then like, I kind of want to direct a movie about you. I mean, beautiful story.
Like, there's a funny story, a quick one at that.
Sure.
So my wife and I, we met in high school, and you know, she saw the first lyrics to like the first Half Heart song ever. She's like, this is really cool. But she actually came on the first tour we ever did, but under like really depressing circumstances for me. So you know, when you meet young, you break up a bunch of times, and sometimes you don't get back together, but if you know, whatever it is. So it's my freshman year of college, and I booked the first Half Heart tour, and the routing, like, no one would book us. The routing was so insane, like, because we were just going wherever we could get shows. The routing was Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island, and then Atlanta, Georgia on New Year's Eve. So like that, like the next day. So like, and then it was Atlanta, Georgia, Alabama, Nashville, Connecticut, Virginia Beach. And then I actually think we were supposed to go Virginia Beach to Vermont. I think that was that. It was just
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
Just very, very terrible, shall I say, European style, routing.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, like, so this is like during our winter break. I basically ruined our relationship that first semester of college booking this tour, because I was so focused on booking it and trying to make that happen. And, you know, we go on break, and then 2 days before Christmas, she dumps me. She just like looks up, she goes, I don't want to date you anymore. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? She's like, yeah, it's not working. See ya. And I was like, holy shit. And she was like really good friends with all my friends. So we go, it's the day of, so we play the MASH show, and the day of the Providence show, which is when the night we were going to leave for Atlanta the next day, because it's a 24-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who booked our van was he was older, and he promised us that he would like use his credit card, because we were 17 or 18 like that. And he would use his credit card to book our van. And so I was like, cool, thanks, man. And so it's the day of, we're supposed to play the Providence show and then go to Atlanta, Georgia that night. We drive with him. He gets to the place and he comes back in, and he's just like shaking his head. He's like, hey man, they don't take debit cards. You have to have a credit card, which I don't have. And I was like, what the fuck, man? what do you mean? You didn't have a credit card? He's like, nah, it's a debit card. Like, you know, that language is used interchangeably. And I'm like, well, you just cost me an entire tour, which cost my relationship with like the love of my life. So I like completely fucking hate you now. And he's like, and then like, we just drove back like in silence, and like I'm just like texting a million people being like, what the fuck, like, does anyone have any like mode of transportation? And we somehow get in touch with this band in this like Christian hardcore band from like Bel Air, Maryland, and they're like, yeah, we have one, we'll rent it out to you for 2 weeks. And we're like, but you have to get here. So we had one car between, it was like two bands. In one car between two bands, so we needed another car, and everyone is like, yo, just ask Marin, ask her, like, who's my, and I was like, dude, she just dumped me like 5 days ago, like, I'm not gonna ask her, and like, she's not gonna care, she's like our friend, like, what is she gonna use her car for? And I'm like, to fucking drive around, it's her fucking car, and like, just see if she'll drive us down to Maryland. It's like, she's not gonna want to drive us to fucking Maryland and then drive home alone. And also, geniuses, how the fuck are we going to get back when we return the fucking van? So they're like, just see if she's down. She's really supportive. So I ask her, and she's like, yeah, but like only if I can come on the tour. And like, which was totally fair, because she's like friends with everybody. Like, she's totally,
yeah,
like, it's totally fine for to ask that. And she's like, I'm not doing it. This would be fun. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, in order to like live out my dream of going out on my first tour, I have to spend 3 weeks with a girl who I believe to be the love of my life, who just fucking dumped me and is absolutely not coming back anytime soon. Like, there wasn't any chance. There was no writing on the wall that we were going to start dating again. And every fucking day was like me sitting in the van with her, just being like, oh, I fucking hate my life, while she's just like laughing it up with my friends, enjoying like every moment. I see, you know, like guys are like hitting on her at shows, and I'm like, yeah, this is like the greatest time of my life. I just can't believe how awesome touring is.
And I'll add to that too. I mean, she broke up with you because of the work you put into booking the tour. And then gets to slide in afterwards and reap the benefits of your hard work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The irony.
So, you know, maybe it was a demonstration of my patience and temerity, I guess you could say. I mean, Kay witnessed some like real, do you remember the trip to Canada?
Yeah, the first time I ever played a show with the band, she had just broken up with you for like the second time.
Yeah.
Maybe? Yeah. How many times total did you break up?
Oh my God. I mean, so many times. Like, yeah. And it was always her breaking up with me, you know, and like, I think like one time I broke up with her. But like, you know, it was always just because we really loved each other and we met so young, and like, it just wasn't healthy to like not know about like ourselves in the context like of other people, like, you know. So that was always kind of it. She was way more keen to understanding that, but you know, like, I like, you know, like really, really liked her and loved her. Obviously I married her and we have a family now, but like, do you remember the trip to Canada?
Yeah, it's a running theme where she breaks up with you and then we go on a 10 plus hour road trip with both of you in the car.
Right, right.
All this wild tension.
So like super, super tense. And Kay,
I didn't really know you at that point.
Right, right.
I remember you kept calling me Kai like over and over, even though I would correct you.
I know, and I always tried to,
some weird tick.
Yeah, I tried to fix it. I've never done it since.
But it was really weird. It was like, I don't know these people. I like this band though. I want to be in it. So we drove from Massachusetts to Canada with this like unbelievable boiling tension kind of the whole time, just kind of spilling over. We played one show in Canada, and as we were driving back, Pat, you basically had a meltdown.
Context, I'm 18, you know, I'm still basically in adolescence, and they started playing this game. Do you remember what it was? It's like some like riddle game.
Riddle game where whatever you say, if you say a certain word, is like, I'm going to bring this to the moon.
Oh my God.
Something super like that. And basically everybody got the game except Pat. and it's just causing insane amounts of tension.
Right.
And I remember
I ended up
pulled
like,
over.
Yeah. I thought I was just getting fucked with, and this is like, you know, my ex-girlfriend and like, I'm 18 and I'm like, just so fucking pissed. And I've been, it was like an overnight drive, and I'm like, oh, and I ended up, I just like slammed the door shut, and like, I didn't punch it, but I like, just like hit my hand back, and I dented the car, and I was like, oh God, like this is not what I wanted. That type of behavior, like literally never persisted. But like, I remember being like,
that was my first interaction with Pat, basically. And I was just like, who is this psycho?
That's a future founder of the Nu Metal Club.
Right.
Exactly.
I think it's fair to say, Kay, that like my demeanor proved that to be an aberration in subsequent years.
I'd say that's true, but there are so many other quirks and abnormalities that the normal fan doesn't know about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's sure.
You could write a book.
Yeah, I mean, nothing like, I'm not like bashing down walls, but yeah. I know how to keep a cool head, you know. Like, but when you tour for like 9 months straight, don't expect everyone to be, you know, just like perfect lovers with each other.
And, touring in a hardcore band, like people think of touring in a band as like, oh, maybe you're in a bus or you're getting hotels every night. Touring in a hardcore band, you're sleeping on hardwood floors a lot of the time, sleeping on concrete. There, if you get a hotel room, three bands share a hotel room. Everybody sneaks in. There's 15 people in like a Motel 8. Brutal. Sometimes you're sleeping in the venue. Like, it's not glamorous at all. So if you do a lot of touring in a hardcore band, it definitely weighs on you.
Yeah.
It's funny that people are like, hey, so how come you guys broke up? And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Let me show you the German squat that had literal feces like everywhere, which made me sick by just like, you know, like the smell of the place, and like show you why we broke up.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, multiple times we would play a show in Germany in a squat. Everybody would leave the show, and then our sleeping arrangements were literally on the stage we just played.
That's disgusting.
Yes.
I mean, Germans famously love shit. That, yeah.
Scott. The Scheiße. Nice. Very big of it.
Oh, my God. I mean, well, I think that's like the most disgusting touring situation. You guys beat Dan Deacon, who was like telling us about traveling, somehow touring by himself, literally solo on Greyhound buses.
Oh, on the buses, yeah. I heard
eating
that.
Cans of beans.
Eating corn. Was it corn bus or beans? Both. Oh, both. Beans and corn. Yeah. Disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, solo
this
is
man,
kind of
this
hilarious.
Man eating beans.
Solo is kind of, in a group, you're doing it something disgusting together. It's like a bonding experience. There's more of you to be judged. When you're one guy, you're just, at a certain point, you're just a crazy guy in a Greyhound bus eating corn, you know? Okay, so one last thing I wanted to ask you about before you we wrap this thing up. There's some kind of tale about your record deal that I was told about, a record contract. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Is this a good final story?
Yeah, so technically... And I could be wrong, but Chris Wren can check this, and I think like Chris Wren is the guy who does Bridge Niner Records. But when we signed to the label, like they did contracts and we didn't actually physically sign, and so it took forever to do it. I think because like my father was like he was like. Let me see this contract. Not that my father knew fucking anything about
like
music law. He was just being like, I just want to make sure you're not getting ripped off. And my father was by no means like a reader of like legal language, but so like he was just like, don't sign that until we get some eyes over it. And I was like, all right. So when I eventually showed it to my father, he couldn't have spent more than like 25 seconds looking at it. He was like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So that delayed the process. But when we finally went to give it to Chris, we were meeting him at Posse Numbers, which was this hardcore music festival. And the year that, like the year in question that I'm talking about, it was at this giant dome, like soccer dome or whatever it was. And when you would open the, like, I don't know if anyone's ever been through those things, but sometimes like if you open the door, like, air just fucking
yeah it's AC
out.
Yeah,
right, it's just like boom. So the festival ended up getting canceled early. This is 2005, because there was like a giant brawl, and everyone's just like scurrying out. We had to go play Chicago, and we're just like, let's get in the van. And Chris is like, hey man, don't forget to give me that contract. So like everyone's in the van, we see him and we're in the van, we're about to leave, and I'm like, hey Chris, I got the contract. So I get it out. And I go to give it to him. And as I give it to him, like we're directly in line, like probably like 30, 40 yards away from like the doors. But like someone opens the door, and as I'm handing him the contract, it just completely shoots off into oblivion, into the woods.
It's like a Simpsons episode or something.
Yeah. And it had been like 6 or 7 months since like they asked us to join the label. And we just sort of looked at each other. We're like, that, well, fuck that. So that was that. So I don't know if we are technically fully signed to Bridge Nine unless Chris Wren, and I wouldn't put it past him, like went searching for it.
So your current contract just like went in the woods. You guys didn't look at all.
I mean, we had to get to Chicago, so we were like, let's get the fuck out of here. So
that's kind of hilarious. But you see, you did go on the label. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out.
There's no contract, I guess.
That was, I mean, here's one last story. Kay, you weren't here, but you know about it for sure. It's the reason why Kay's in the band, actually. So we had a former guitarist, a wonderful human being, and it just wasn't connecting, musically, kind of, you know, socially. Wonderful human being, though. And we're on the same tour, summer 2005, and this person, like, who was in the band at the time, like, snored really loud. Like, I'm talking like a tank, like a genuine tank. Like, you couldn't sleep in a saint. No one could. It was like a machine gun going off. And so when we would stay at, like, motels, he would just get a separate room. But not because we made him, but because he was just like, you know what? You guys can't sleep. Let's just stay at cheap places, and then that'll be that. So we're like, well, dude, you don't have to do that. And he's like, no, it's fine. I'll do that. So, you know, we're about like 2 weeks into the tour, and we're in somewhere like between Northern and Southern California, like in like somewhere in Central California, like where there's like a lot of like cow murdering factories that like smell, that make the whole area smell terrible. And like, we find this like kind of like off the beaten path motel. And after like what was like 2 hours of like constantly going to hotels, no vacancy, no, like, and it was a lot of stop and go. And like this bandmate that I'm talking about was just like, you know, everyone was getting grumpy. So we finally found a place, and we go to the front door, and this person, you know, comes out to get their own room, and I look over them, and I'm like, hey, the room, it's like everyone's in poor spirits. It's like 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, hey, it's pretty cheap. And he looks at me, and he just fires off a, go fuck yourself. And I was like, excuse me? And like, and it was people who were just pissy because we were, it was late, and it was like a miserable night. And I was like, yo, what the fuck? Like, and so we got into a tiff, and the tiff led to this person just kind of like quickly saying like, you know what? Fuck this band. I quit. And I'm like, you quit? We got like 3 weeks left. Like, you know, like, and so I was like, what the hell? So everyone goes to bed. This person has their own room, and we wake up the next morning, and I was thinking, you know, like, listen, we can sleep through this. And it'll be fine in the morning, and we'll just sort of, you know, go through the growing pains of being in a band together. And I ended up like, you know, I see them, and they're in the waiting room, and you know, the tension was still there. And I think a lot of it was because, you know, friends, great match, like bandmates, little different musically. And like I said, like kind of like band socially. And so like, that's probably why the tension remained through the night. Cause we were just kind of reading the writing on the wall that this probably isn't a good match. So I say to this person like, hey, listen, let's move on from this. And they're like, you know what? No, I just quit. And I was like, really, man? Like, we're in the middle of like a desert, like California, like what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't fucking care. And I was like, damn. So I was like, well, okay. So then we go to the McDonald's, like right next to the hotel, and just had like McDonald's breakfast.
Once again, McDonald's.
Yeah. Got to support those up and coming, you know, restaurants, you know,
more like have heart disease. If you guys don't watch your diet, you know what I'm saying?
So like, we're talking, and like all of us are like, yo, is he seriously like not coming back what's he going to do? And we're like, I don't know, like whatever, you know? So like an hour goes by, and we're pulling out, and we see him, and we're like, yo, come on, just get back in the van, come on. And I'll never forget it. Like, he looks at me and he just waves his hands, and then he turns around and just walks what looked like into the desert.
Like he's gonna fade away.
Right. And all the while, November Rain is playing in the car. and we just get in the van and we're like, we're just driving, and like, it's like 5 minutes. And we're like, no one says anything. And we're like, did that just really happen? Did he just like quit the band and just like walk off into the desert? And like, cell phone, like, I don't even think we had cell phones. Maybe we did. It was early ages, but like, I don't think he had a cell phone. And that was that. So like, and then like later that day, this person called and we're like, hey, listen, I'm really sorry. And we're like, yo, listen, let's talk about this. This just isn't a good match. And like, you know, this is a sign. This is some writing on the wall. So, you know, let's sort of move, like, let's just bygones and just sort of work on a friendship. And they were cool with that. And this person, you know, I would call them up, and you know, they're a wonderful human being. I love them to death. And it, but it was like a moment where we were like, holy shit, this person just walked off into like the wilderness. And and that's actually how Kay ended up joining the band, because we had tried him out in 2005, went to Canada, and
rejected.
You weren't rejected. It was that I had a close kinship with the guitarist, and the bassist at the time had a close kinship with this person who ended up walking into the desert. And it wasn't a good match totally for everyone else at the time. So, you know, but you weren't rejected. I'll say, you know, it was a classic Pat Flynn trying to keep the peace, within the unit, but it all, you know, that's how that all shook out.
It all worked out in the end. Now you're happily married. Here you guys are together, and you're, you know, now everything's good. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and you guys are on a Zoom podcast. It all worked out.
Yeah, 15 years later.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. We haven't been a band for
quite
some time. I mean, those reunions, I didn't even think really consider us being a band, but you know, it's good. Keeps us in touch. I appreciate you guys having us on. It's good to
absolutely
chat.
Well, boys, thank you so much for coming
absolutely.
On. I've wanted to do this for a long, long time. And once this is all over, if it does end, if you ever make it out to California, we got to do this again in person, I think.
Yeah, that'd be a good time. We can get another half hour. Remember Ryan?
Yeah.
Hudon could chat it up. Austin Stemper. Massive fan of yours, big time
fan.
Wow.
You got
a large following from
Half Heart Part 2.
You make you an honorary member of the Half Heart crew.
Oh, dude, let's go. Let's freaking go. By the way, my neighbor, when I first moved in, I saw like this guy walking in the street in a Half Heart hoodie. And sure enough, he's like a huge fan. He was like the first person I met living around here.
Dude sounds super fucking cool.
Yeah, shout out to my neighbor. My good neighbor. There's been some neighbor talk on this this podcast before. I have bad neighbors and I have a good neighbor.
Okay.
The good neighbor is the Half Heart band. It would be a major plot twist if my crazy neighbor.
let's get him on next time.
Yeah, get him on the pod. All right. Well, thank you, boys. And thanks for listening, everybody. Kicked off and franked off. She's obsessed with the outside. Nothing or too afraid to fail. Don't you let her out of life. Born if it's done. Loving what you see, but you fear what you think. Cause your mind and your body a messy fucking link that leaves you vulnerable. Steps upon the pain. You're a god and a potential to merge it in the rain. True beauty can't be stayed with the I want for this. With a mind fuck, when I think you're